WFAE Podcasting is funded by Corporate Information Technologies, helping businesses take a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
Percent.com.
This is Charlotte Tux. I'm Mike Collins. There are some young people who constantly get into trouble. They sometimes exhibit behaviors that concern their parents and other adults in their lives. They can become involved in drugs and alcohol and underage sexual activity. We've all heard about the Tough Love treatment centers that began opening around the country in the last few decades to handle these young people. The news reports most of us have seen show them instilling tough discipline, tough love on these wayward youths in an effort to straighten them out. That's what happened to our guest today, but to hear her tell it, it is the organizations applying the discipline that need straightening out. Cindy Etler was a self-described bad girl, but she says she wasn't as bad as her mother thought she was. She wasn't as bad as Straight Inc. thought she was. That was the rehabilitation center her mother sent her to, a center that has since been shut down for their abusive approach to correction. Cindy Etler has written a book about her experiences called Straightling, and she joins us for the hour. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I put you on the wrong microphone. What a way to start the week. Good morning. Today, you are a veteran high school teacher, so you were working with the very kids that you were once... that you were once.
Exactly.
And some of them probably exhibit some behaviors.
Exactly.
I would imagine that your experience has given you some wisdom about how to effectively handle these kids.
Absolutely. My approach with them is very different than the standard teachers. Basically, I approach the kids with the understanding that what they need is a listening ear and someone to actually like them. And if they're acting bad, that's usually why they're acting bad, because nobody's liked them yet.
That's the crux of it.
That is.
Really?
It is.
Why? Did nobody like you?
No. Oprah Winfrey couch, I was just an abused child. And that's the kids who we see acting bad, the ones that we see really acting bad, getting into those bad behaviors, they're 90% of them are abused children. So they're not getting what they need at home, and they seek it elsewhere.
Your father was a, although he passed away when you were young, he was a famous composer.
He was.
He composed a piece of music, did he not, to open Lincoln Center?
He did. They commissioned a piece of his for opening Lincoln Center, and Leonard Bernstein directed that show.
Wow. Your stepfather, however, was not.
He was
all those things.
A different animal.
Was that part of it? Was it that your mother wasn't equipped to handle a 14-year-old girl? What was the crux of the problem?
You nailed it. That was it. Exactly. There was denial in the house, and the man that she had married, and essentially she married him just for the security, to get a roof over her head. She had her own issues, obviously. Mm-hmm. She was in denial about what was happening, I think, as a measure of self-preservation. If you're trapped in a situation, you have to ignore everything else to enable yourself to stay in that situation.
But what about your friends? Did you not have friends who you palled around with in normal ways that didn't get you into trouble?
Nope.
Why not? Why do you suppose that
means? When I was younger, when I look at kids in schools, the kids who are the quote-unquote losers, mm-hmm. the ones who are maladapted and can't interact with their peers and therefore they're rejected by their peers, I look at their eyes and I just see what's going on at home. They haven't learned anything good about themselves and they haven't gained any kind of confidence in anything. And in actuality, they go to school each day with these memories of what's going on at home. So the quote-unquote normal kids can't relate to them. And they actively ostracize them, which continues the cycle for the kid.
So your mother, and we're going to talk about your experiences in this environment, this Straight Inc. environment, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about them in depth, but your mother, to straighten you out, sent you to this place, which was horrible, and we'll talk about that, and you came out, and now you're okay. I mean, you're normal, you're a teacher, you're doing well, you have a master's degree in education. What flipped the good switch in you?
It's bizarre. I mean, I think some of it's a matter of nature versus nurture. I think and this is, you know, kind of woo-woo, but I think I inherited some good stuff from my father, so I have an innate just positivity and strength. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. The other part is a very simple answer. It was school. The people who were kind to me and the people who saw some kind of a gift in me were my teachers. Mm. And literally that saved me.
You say, as a 14-year-old, that you were a young person who viewed yourself as a good kid playing bad.
Right.
But your mother viewed you as, and I quote, a badass, a slut, a junkie, stoner.
A junkie, yeah.
Why did she view you that way? Were you a junkie?
No.
Did you take drugs?
No, when I went into Straight Ink, I had tried smoking pot twice. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a pot smoker. I wanted to be cool. I didn't know what I was doing. But the house was out of control, and Cindy was you know, wild and trying to destroy her marriage. That's a quote.
Mm-hmm.
From a,
did that come from your mother, or did it come from your stepfather?
Came from my mother. There's a, at the end of the book, there is a newspaper article after Straight, when I was thoroughly brainwashed. We were interviewed by the little local paper, and I was reciting the party line. I was a drug addict. If my mother hadn't put me in Straight, I would be dead by now. I was a 15-year-old saying that.
And that's what they teach you to say.
That's exactly what they, which is a complex part of the way that system works and the way they continue to get money, or they did, past tense. But in that article, there's a quote from my mother saying, I deeply believe she was intent on destroying my marriage. So that's how my mother had to frame it,
mm-hmm,
to protect herself. She had to blame it all on me.
So what year was this?
85 was when I went in.
Were there lots of these stories about these organizations? I remember there were even some reality shows on television in the 90s about these wilderness operations.
Right.
But were there lots of stories on television that were telling people, adult people at that time with problem, in quotes, children, that this is the way to go?
That's such a fascinating piece of it. The reason that I went into Straight, I started out in a Straight in Springfield, Virginia. I had a distant relative who lived there. She saw on the local news a broadcast of Nancy Reagan and Princess Di visiting Straight Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
And she called my mother. She had heard through the grapevine that I had run away. And she called my mother and told my mother about this miracle program, Turning Around Kids, Straight Incorporated, because Nancy Reagan and Princess Di were visiting. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you were the good kid that you think you were,
that I think I was,
The good kid playing bad, why were you playing bad?
I was desperate. The stuff going on in my house, I was angry about it. And really, what you said before when you asked, did I have friends? As I said, I couldn't connect with the good, stable, well-adjusted kids. I had nothing in common with them. When a child is in that position in life, people need community. People need connection. When a child can't connect with their stable, well-adjusted peers, they're going to seek out who is accessible. Who is accessible are the deranged or the maladjusted, the rejects.
Or kids in your situation.
Or kids in my situation.
Why do you think you couldn't connect with the adjusted kids?
They talked about things like cable television and The Gap. You know, anything I had to talk about was not cable television or The Gap.
You didn't have cable TV?
Have cable TV. We were poor folks.
Okay. And you didn't go shopping at The Gap?
Did not shop at The Gap.
What was your family life like? I mean, when you were 12 and 13, before these behaviors, these so-called behaviors got you into trouble and got you into Straight, mm-hmm, Inc., what was the home life like?
Loud, violent. A weird thing was my father's death. Nobody talked about it. Maybe that's not weird. Maybe that's common. But nobody talked about it. He died when I was a year old, and then all of a sudden there was this kind of monster in the house. So I think I had a lot of repressed, whatever, emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one scene where something had happened that infuriated me. And this is when I was a small child. I went into a closet and we had these like Mad Magazine softcover books. It wasn't a magazine, it was a book. I went into this closet and just screamed bloody murder by myself for an hour and tore this softcover book into little bits and shreds. It was like I was the Hulk. I had this fury because of what was going on.
You were how old? when you did
that? I was probably 9.
And your mother never knew that, or did she do?
Punished for it. She would ignore me when I was having a screaming fit. And
to understand that's pretty bizarre behavior.
It's bizarre
and troubling behavior.
And troubling.
If you're a mom, I mean, and you're not a psychologist, and you don't really know. And this is the '80s; things are different now.
Exactly.
But even now, I would think you'd look at that child and go, "Oh my,
what is going on?
We have our hands full here."
Absolutely.
Did it get worse from there? What's the worst thing you did prior to your mother making the decision to put you into straight?
From her perception, it was leaving the house. It was running away and refusing to come back.
Where did you run to and for how long?
I ran – at that time, we lived out in the sticks. So I ran to it was a burned-down house, and I stayed in the house a little bit. A neighbor knew I would be there. I stayed with her for a day, and then I just kind of hopped from house to house, friend to friend, and looked for someplace to stay.
What provoked you running away?
There was a particular final violent scene with my mother's husband, and I was backed into a corner in the bathroom, and my mother stood in the doorway and watched. She didn't do anything.
This is your stepfather.
Stepfather, yeah.
Cornering you in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And your mother did nothing. So you really had no alternative in your mind.
I didn't.
Was it a violent act? And you don't have to get into graphic detail, but mm-hmm. was it a violent act or was it something more?
That scene was violent.
Okay.
When I was younger, it was something more. And again, back to the teenagers that I work with, children will kind of passively deal with that the best they can, and then they hit puberty and they start to get strong and they start fighting back.
And this was in Bridgeport,
Connecticut? At that time, we lived in Monroe, which is a small town. Bridgeport was the closest city.
Uh-huh.
That time it was murder capital of the U.S. It was, you know, bad, dangerous. It was the hood.
Yeah, you refer to it as a dark town. Isn't that where you ran away to?
It was.
Eventually?
It was.
So that's pretty – also, I'm trying to see your mother's side of this.
But I know that's fair.
But that's pretty scary when a 14-year-old girl runs away, spends time at a burnout house, goes from house to house, night to night to stay. Did your mother know where you were from day to day, night to night? Were people telling her, or did you just disappear?
I disappeared.
Did she have the police out looking for you?
She did. She.
So she was doing what she thought was right, and which in fact was right, wasn't it?
I guess, you know, you're making me think about from my mother's point of view, and I resent that. No, you're making excellent points. You are. I have no idea. I have my perception of what was going on with her. I could be wrong.
So what I'm getting at here is that she put you in this place, this Straight Inc.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't put you in there with malice. She put you in there, I would imagine. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She put you in there because she thought you were out of control, that you were going to hurt yourself or get killed. She didn't want that on her conscience. She probably loved you. I mean, she didn't have a strange, but maybe not. You're grimacing at that idea.
I'm grimacing at that. Okay, everything you said about why she put me in there is accurate.
Uh-huh.
And in her way, she did love me. She just has a very strange perception of love.
Okay. But she was concerned about your well-being.
She was.
So she thought this would put you on the right path, this straight thing. Did she know how they operated prior to putting you in there?
No, they had an excellent system of propaganda up and running, hence Nancy Reagan, Princess Di, and parents were indoctrinated into the philosophy. They didn't see us for 10 months at least, so they didn't see what was going on behind closed doors at Straight. When we reappeared 10 months later, we were scrubbed clean and apologetic and humble, and that seemed wonderful, so...
Cindy Etler is with us. She's the author of a book called Straightling, which outlines her experiences in this correctional facility. That's the best way to describe Straight Inc. at the time. We'll come back and find out more about what happened there in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru in Gastonia, presenting A Lot to Love at Tyndall Subaru in August with a full line of all-wheel drive Subaru vehicles, including the new 2012 Impreza. Details available at TyndallSubaru.com. Well, in the years following the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York, leaders in that city held an open competition to find the best design for a memorial to those who lost their lives. They received over 5,000 entries, from all over the world, but in the end, they chose New York resident and architect Michael Arad's design. It reflects the voids left by the towers, and Michael Arad shares the progress of his design from concept to fruition with us tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Lebanon-based militant group Hezbollah has emerged as a major concern among U.S. security officials, understanding the threat Hezbollah poses in the Middle East and the West.
Join that conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. I'm talking to Cindy Etler, author of Straightling, a book about her experiences with Straight Incorporated, which was how would you describe it?
Honestly, when I put it into a nutshell, I say it was a cult masquerading as a drug rehab.
A cult?
A cult.
How so?
The central tenets of any cult are, you know, the most basic one is we cut you off from everyone you know, and we convince you that the only safe place is in this group with these people, and if you aren't with these people, you will die. And then there is the philosophy that's very strange, that you have to adopt. And if you will not adopt that philosophy, you're going to be chewed up, and you won't be spit out, but you'll be chewed up.
Well, now, a lot of the kids in there may have been heavy drug users, right? May have been.
There's a large community of former straightlings, and the vast majority of them, their stories are basically just like mine. I know a few people who actually were doing drugs. I think I know exactly one who is still an active alcoholic, but
and would you describe yourself as somebody who was misdiagnosed by their parents?
Absolutely.
They overreacted to your dabbling in, I think you said you smoked pot, what, three times?
Tried. Uh-huh.
Cigarettes?
Yeah.
Alcohol?
Once.
What did you drink?
Budweiser followed by Peachtree Schnapps.
That should end it right there.
Exactly. Ooh.
But you were 14.
The drunk, I was 13. I was 13 for all of it, actually.
But if they hadn't, did they try to step in and say, don't do this anymore, don't smoke pot, don't drink, you're too young, et cetera, et cetera? Or
no, but I wasn't at the kitchen table, you know, firing up a blunt.
Right.
I mean, it was, I had a big...
How did she know that you tried pot?
She didn't know until we got too straight.
So why did she think you needed to be there? I mean, the fact that you ran away?
She didn't know what to do with me. And when she got this call about this miracle program, she was
so,
like...
I'm just trying to understand her point of view, because I think it's important to know where your mom was coming from.
I agree.
If I'm your mother, and I'm looking at you, and I don't know that you have smoked pot until I put you in this facility.
Mm-hmm.
Do I know that you've drunk alcohol? No.
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 I came home stinking like a sailor.
Okay, so I could smell it on you.
Yeah.
Do I know you've run away? So what other behaviors did you exhibit that would tell me, as your mother, something needs to be done?
There was a lot of screaming and slamming doors in the house, and a lot of, I mean, these altercations with my stepfather would end with physical violence done to me, but there was a lot of screaming on my behalf, swearing.
About what? Just things they wanted you to do, like clean your room?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that. This man was, he had calculated behaviors designed to set me off. And also he had done other kinds of things to me when I was little and I still had to live with him. So that just creates this sort of a hornet's nest in a glass jar. And you know, these angry bugs are hitting the jar. Bing, bing, that was me.
Okay, so she puts you in this facility. She doesn't know what the treatment modality is because
right.
they keep that relatively secret.
Exactly.
And you say that you were trained to believe and repeat many times daily, if my parents hadn't put me in straight, I'd be dead or in jail right now. You say that wasn't true for you. Could it have been true for other people in straight?
Could have been.
Could have been.
Could have been.
So are you saying then that this is a bad thing for everybody or just a bad thing for marginal misbehavior?
The way that this program operated, I mean, I'm not an expert in psychology, but mm-hmm. the way that this program operated was really based around, it was abusive, and I don't imagine that anybody is really going to benefit from abuse.
Put your headphones on because we have a caller from Huntington Beach, California on the line. John, who says, I believe, that he knows you and was in straight.
Mm-hmm.
John, go ahead.
Cindy?
John?
I got your book.
Fantastic.
I just want everyone to know that. Listen to this girl. She knows what she's talking about. But I do have one question because I know time's limited on air because anyway, how do you put all this stuff behind you? Because I'm reading the book, and I see straight, you know, it's horrible and all that, but that's just a small piece of my life.
Mm-hmm. So how do you put it all behind you? Is the writing the book kind of cathartic?
It was. It absolutely was. But I think I had put it behind me before that. Again, it was kind of school that made me start to feel good about myself and able to adjust.
John, good luck to you. So let's talk about the techniques that you she drops you off at straight.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? It's your first minute in the building. What happens?
Oh, gosh, first minute, I'm looking around and I'm like this. I was told it was a boarding school for hippies. And I'm thinking, well, where's the tie-dyes? Where's the Jimi Hendrix poster? It was kids with middle-parted hair and pleated pants. And I look to the door and there's two big guys standing there with their arms crossed across their chest. Teenagers. Something's wrong.
So she drives you from Connecticut
mm-hmm.
to Springfield, Virginia, which
mm-hmm.
is on the outskirts of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
What were you told when they put you in the car to drive you to Springfield?
I had been staying at a homeless shelter for teenagers, and the people at the shelter were fantastic. And they said, you're going to this boarding school. You'll be out of your mother's house. It's a cool place. I thought I was going to learn how to smoke pot there.
Did they know what you were going to, these people in the homeless shelter?
They couldn't have.
Couldn't have known. So you're there and you recognize pretty much off the bat that something was wrong. Did your mother not see those same signals and look at these teenage guys with their arms crossed looking like, I guess, thugs and not say,
I think she felt relieved. The problem was no longer going to be hers.
So she drops you off.
Mm-hmm.
She leaves. The door closes.
And there are rubber gloves and teenagers of both genders in the room, and they make sure I don't have drugs.
This is a strip search?
Yes.
In front of kids?
Yes.
Of both genders your age?
Yes.
How humiliating is that?
It was pretty bad.
Of course, but they all went through it themselves.
Exactly. The staff members were children. The staff members were
what?
Teenagers. Yeah.
The staff members were teenagers?
Who had been through straight.
Were there? How many adults were running this place?
There were some executive staff. We would see them once a week. There were 5-6 of them.
So how did these teenagers get to run this place? And it's like the inmates running the asylum.
Absolutely. It's hard to
Because these kids were in there for infractions, perceived or real, not
mm-hmm.
unlike yours,
mm-hmm.
One presumes that they have problems of their own that they're learning to deal with, and yet they're in there training, teaching, correcting newcomers
mm-hmm.
to the fold.
Mm-hmm.
Were they vindictive?
Oh,
were they
absolutely?
Were they? I'm trying to find the words. Mean? Were they deliberately so? I mean, or were they just acting mean and vindictive to scare you and get you on the right path quickly?
It was option A. The only way to survive in there was to become powerful, and the way that you became powerful was one of the primary modes of treatment was something called spit therapy, and that would be when you were stood up in front of the group. This is you standing above hundreds of teenagers, and a peer would scream in your face, spit in your face about something you were, quote unquote, in denial about.
How would they know what you're in denial about? Did they interview you? Did they have you talk about yourself in front of the group?
For instance, when I went in, I said I don't smoke pot. I mean, I said I don't smoke pot at all, and they got it out of me some, you know, way. And I was stood up, and, you know, they said, Cindy says she smoked pot and alcohol. And suddenly the whole room is on fire, and kids are going to stand up and scream at me, you are a bleep liar, and you are a little druggy bleep, all kinds of. There was a lot of really profane language.
No adults in the room?
Uh-uh. Nope.
Only kids. That's by design.
Yes.
Because they felt that your peers telling you what was wrong with you and showing you the way would be more effective than a grown-up telling
you? That was the stated philosophy. And in actuality, I'm 14. Do I care what adults think? No. Do I care what my peers think?
Yes.
Yes.
So there's spit therapy. There's something called motivating.
Motivating. I don't know if I can adequately describe it on air, but it was how you showed that you were desperate to get called on. If you were honest and you had nothing to hide, then you really wanted to stand up and talk to your group. So what it involved was putting both arms in the air and shaking them around violently while staying in your chair somehow. And when it was really hot, arms were flinging around, you were getting whacked in the head by other kids' fists, and spit was flying and sweat, literally. Chairs slipping around in the sweat. I'm not kidding, it was a cult. And it was enervating. I mean, once you're indoctrinated, that's thrilling. It's sort of like a mosh pit.
Did you become eventually indoctrinated?
I did. It's the only way you could survive.
There's singing preschool songs was another technique that they used. What was that about? So, I mean, preschool songs are what, like Ring Around the Rosie? And
we didn't sing that one, but Little Bunny Foo Foo, I'm a Little Teapot, and then there were songs that straight incorporated terminology was substituted for the original lyrics.
Oh. Mm. Now, what's wrong with I'm a little – it seems silly.
What's wrong with I'm a little teapot?
Yeah.
If you are a 15, 16, 17-year-old that considers themselves hardcore and you're singing I'm a little teapot and doing
– It humbles you.
It humbles you. That's the word.
Well, you're also being forced to wear humble clothes, you said. Mm-hmm. Humble clothes would be what? Not the Gap.
Not the Gap.
That wasn't a problem for you, though.
No.
So what would humble clothes be?
Humble clothes were the most embarrassing thing that your parents could possibly find at the thrift store. Clothes that were the opposite of your druggy clothes. So I wore tight Levi's and tie-dyes, and I was forced to wear, like, orange corduroys and polyester shirts. And
of course, if everybody in the room are wearing the same clothes...
Mm. Doesn't make it cool.
but you all you have to do is look around the room. How can that be a humbling experience, or even an experience that embarrasses you or makes you angry? Well, I would think it'd be funny if everybody's wearing it.
And at a Halloween party, yes, but developmentally at that age, you're not thinking about I'm just like everybody else. You feel like you have a spotlight on you. Any kid at that age, developmentally, so
there was a spanking machine.
There was a spanking machine.
Does it need any more definition than that?
I can try to describe it if you'd like.
Go ahead.
Okay. This was your peers only, but the other. I mean, this was your gender only, but the other gender was watching. Picture a row of girls lined up like a caterpillar with their legs standing like the classic plastic cowboy figurine, you know, spread legs, and somebody mm-hmm. starts at the back and has to crawl through all these legs, and every girl standing there that you're crawling through is leaning down and smacking you as you go through the spanking machine. You cannot make this stuff up.
Belt looping.
Okay. Picture the back of a person who is wearing a pair of pants with belt loops. That would be the newcomer, the kid who is not trusted yet, who has not been brainwashed yet. Mm-hmm. An oldcomer, somebody who has earned trust, puts their thumb through the back middle belt loop and then curls their hands into the waistband and yanks up.
Mm-hmm.
that's a little humiliating. So, you know, you're at the end of a human leash if you're the newcomer being belt looped, and then they steer you around, push you around, put their knuckles in your lower back. So anytime that you're not seated in group or you are not behind locked doors in the host home, you have somebody's hand in your pants.
Was there never any adult counseling, psychological conversations, nothing like that? It was all this peer pressure nonsense?
There was not that when I was there. In fact, so many kids were suicidal. There was a lot of self-mutilation in group, and people won lawsuits because they were not given therapy when they needed it. So we just had peer suicide watch, stayed up all night, watched the newcomer, make sure they didn't kill themselves.
How long were you in there?
16 months.
16 months?
16 months.
How did they decide when you were set to be released? Who made that decision?
I don't really know, but I have a suspicion for me that it was because Strait was really under scrutiny from state investigators. I think they had to start springing us.
How many Strait Inks were there at the time around the country?
There were 12.
In various different states?
Across the country.
You went in. How long was it before you spoke with or saw your mother or your stepfather?
To actually speak with them, for me, it was 10 months.
Did they call and check up on you? Were they called by the adult people who ran the place and said, here's a progress report? Or did they just walk away from the facility and 10 months later they were allowed to see you? I mean, that just seems like something no reasonable adult would do.
Less reasonable is the fact that the parents, for the first, I'm not sure how many months, had to be there every Monday and Friday night for hours and hours and hours for their own group to be indoctrinated. So my mother and stepfather were driving from Connecticut to Virginia every Monday and Friday evening for months.
For their own sessions?
For their own sessions.
And they were conducted by the adults?
I don't know.
And so they didn't ask, do you know this now? Did they ask to see you? Did they ask what the programs were that you were going through? Did they have any interest in, any knowledge of, any curiosity about what was happening behind on the other side of the door?
They were being taught that we were druggy scumbags, and they were being taught what we were actually doing that they didn't know about. They were being taught how horrible we were, and they were being taught how Strait was saving us, and they bought it.
Where did this Strait philosophy come from?
That's a great question. It stemmed from a group called Synanon. I'm not sure how many people are familiar with that. Synanon was a California-based cult that they created the philosophy of basically abuse as treatment, confrontation therapy. So Synanon had the offspring of the seed, and the seed spawned Strait.
Cindy Etler is our guest. Her book about her experiences as a 14 and I guess a 15-year-old girl in Strait Inc. Have been outlined in this book that she wrote called Straitling. She is now a high school teacher with a master's degree and also works with troubled young people, troubled
teens, yep.
Hopefully in a different way than she was worked with. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more of what happened to her in that program and what happened to that program when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAD. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Lime Energy, building long-term relationships that deliver clean energy solutions for future generations. More information available on sustainable energy opportunities at lime-energy.com. The Lebanon-based militant group Hezbollah has emerged as a major concern among U.S. security officials. Understanding the threat Hezbollah poses in the Middle East and the rest of the world, the topic of the conversation at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation with Cindy Etler, right now is the time, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE. And, of course, online at wfae.org/Charlotte. Talks. We're coming right back.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. Looking for something fast, fun, and easy?
Last time you said that, we spent the night in the poke.
No, I'm talking about the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
Oh!
Support your local station by donating your car instead of trading it in. For more information, call 866-789-TMCP.
TMCP?
Yeah, take my car, please!
That's 866-789-8627.
Or go to WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE-FHE in Hickory. I'm Mike Collins. Cindy Etler's with us, the author of Straightling. She went through a program at Straight Incorporated in the 80s that her parents put her into because she had dabbled with pot three times. She had had a drink once. She had run away from home, and this was a kind of a scared straight program. But you were in there for 16 months.
16 months.
9 or 10 months before your mother even got to see you.
There was these open meetings Friday nights. Uh-huh. That's what Nancy Reagan and Princess Di attended. So you would stand up, the straightling would stand up across the warehouse room from their parents, and their parents could say, I hate you, and you're horrible, and you better do this program. And all you could say back from across the warehouse room was, I love you, Mom.
What if you'd said, Mom, this place is nuts. Mom, here's what they're doing to me.
You would have been tackled and taken down.
In front of your parents?
What would they have done?
Did anybody try to do that?
I didn't ever see it in an open meeting, but there's legend. There are legends.
So when you finally got to meet her, did you meet her face-to-face, one-on-one?
It was something called a talk. It was a 3 to 4 minute sit-down meeting in the warehouse where you were belt-looped over to your mother,
uh-huh.
and you had an old comer with you, and you were allowed only to say one thing. That was one druggy incident from your past describing what you did, so confessing something, probably made up if you hadn't really done much, and then how you felt about it now. And then you could say, I love you, to your parents. And they got to say whatever they wanted in response.
What did your mother say to you?
You know, I don't remember. I've blocked out the talks.
If you truly are a troublemaker,
mm-hmm.
and you're in there because you really are a hellraiser,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't you say, these people are crazy. Here's what they're doing. Here's what I went through yesterday. Here's the kind of treatment that they're giving us. Why wouldn't you say? Go ahead and you wrote about it. So if mm-hmm. you want to read something from the book that's applicable to that, go ahead and do it.
That is an excellent question, and there was a system for that. People who were known misbehaviors were taken down before open meeting and brought into an intake room, a small room, and they were restrained by their peers with a hand over their mouth so they wouldn't make a noise until they were brainwashed and they could be seen by the adults, by their parents.
So before we get accused, before you read, and mm-hmm. before we get accused of bashing
mm-hmm.
Nancy Reagan and Princess Diana,
oh gosh,
they were there to see it, and they said good things about it
right.
because they didn't see.
They did not.
Mm-mm. What was really going
no,
on?
No, they saw the propaganda. They saw the cheery face.
Okay.
So I'm going to read a little section of a scene where a troublemaker girl is taken down, and this is starting out in group. A fist hits my spine, so I move through the screams and shrieking metal down the row. When I get to the empty seat, though, I can't help it. I look at Amanda again as the big guy snaps his hand over her mouth. He's gagging her. Her face is an alarm, red and getting redder. Her eyes bulge and she slams her head forward, then back. Crack of kissing skulls. Shree of Amanda's screams. She got the hand off her mouth. Gimme my doc, she says. She rips her bare foot away from the guy who was pinning it. He lunges and tackles her shin. Other guys are running at her. That's when I sit down. I sit and pray for somewhere safe to put my tray so I can plug my ears. Amanda's sounds are shredding me. Her eyes are too soft for this. Intake room, sit on her. It's our hero striding across the room. He's calm. He's casual. He's happy. There's more fleshy struggle, more running feet. Group, look, Matt says in a voice you don't ignore. We spin around to watch Amanda, carried across the room by 6 guys. She's a human casket. She's got only one boot on, and she's rippling, trying to shake the boys off of her, and she's screaming, Gimme my Doc Martin, you bastards! I'll kill you! Another guy runs over and jams a hand down on her mouth. His teeth glint through his smile. In English class one time, Mrs. Skinner told us this rule they use in Japan to make sure everybody acts like everybody else. It goes, The nail that sticks up must be hammered down. Amanda is today's nail, but she's not smooth and straight like a regular nail. She's all knotted up. They can't hammer her flat, so they're killing her instead. The funeral ends as they carry her through a door, left of the kitchen. The door slams, the group room silent. It sounds like the end of the world.
You mentioned school in there, and you mentioned a school teacher. Was that in the facility, or
no.
They took you out of school?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't go to school
no.
for how many months?
16.
Is that legal?
It's not. That was one of the reasons that they were eventually closed down.
The Huffington Post has written about this, and they said that Straight, that's the organization, has long been discredited for not only being ineffective but harmful. Its policy of using confrontation, humiliation, and physical punishment led to dozens of lawsuits, with plaintiffs winning hundreds of thousands of dollars for kidnapping, unlawful imprisonment, and emotional abuse. And many survivors have since been diagnosed with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned PTSD. Do you think you had it?
It's a little awkward, but yes, I've had a lot of therapy, so I'm great now. I'm the happiest person I know. But yes, and it was particularly acute right when you got out of the place, because you were sprung from being in the building every day with your peers who you had come to love and need, and that was where it was safe, and you were suddenly in your druggy high school alone.
And when you get sprung and you know that people that you love and need are still there, what does that do to you?
It messes you up. I was suicidal.
I mean, when did you start telling people about what was really going on?
Not for a long time.
And who did you tell when you started telling
people? It was probably 20 years after the fact. You can't describe this stuff. What I just read, you can't describe that to someone. I was in a drug rehab. Oh, you were at a country club. That's what people think.
Yeah.
All these things.
Are they all like this, do you think? Were they all like this, or were they just at this particular organization?
Well, there's Hazelden in what, Minnesota, the Midwest somewhere. I think that's kind and nice. I'm sure there are. I had a friend after Straight who was at a country club type rehab for a month. You know, I'm sure there are some. Not all programs are based on this philosophy.
Okay. Now, you've called them a cult.
Mm-hmm.
You've also said that Straight and other programs like it are sometimes nothing more than ways to make money.
Absolutely.
They paint troubled teens as bad so that desperate parents will pay anything to get them fixed. How much did this cost?
In the back of the book, in the epilogue, I actually have canceled checks that I found. The very first month, and this was 1985, the very first month was like $2,107. That was the first month. I was in there for 16 months.
You were poor.
We were poor, but because my father had died, I'm not sure where the money came from. It's not like I can ask my mother, but I know that after I got out of Straight, I started receiving Social Security checks because of my father's death.
Uh-huh.
I suspect that's where the money came from.
What is your relationship with your mother now?
I mean, it's sort of friendly. I don't see her much. I sent her a letter before the book was published saying, I got a book coming out. Please don't read it.
Please don't read it?
Please don't read it.
Why don't you want her to read it?
Because, as I said, she was, she has a lot invested in being in denial and maintaining her perception of herself. If she had to see herself in this light, she would know it was true, and I think it would break her.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You care that much?
I mean, I care that much about everybody.
Okay. Let's take some calls from folks who've been listening for a while. Patty in Hickory, thank you for your call. Welcome. Oh, sorry, Patty. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'm just blown away by the last thing you said. I wanted to ask about Straight if it was still around. I'm glad to hear it was closed down. One of the things I wanted to say was when I was a teenager, my mother caught me with pot and drinking, and we didn't need Straight ink. I got the Madea looks from her eyes and maybe an occasional backhand, and that kind of worked, and it was a lot cheaper and very effective. It's called mothering. It's called parenting. And I apologize that you didn't have that. And quite frankly, Cindy, I think your mom needs closure. She needs to see that book. I'd like to think that there are no programs like this still in continuance. I suspect where there's money to be made, and when there are parents that refuse to parent, programs like this probably still do exist, and that's very, very sad.
Well, you say that Straight Inc. at least at one time, was being closed down, and they would reopen under with the same people
exactly.
under a different name. Is that still happening?
No. Same people, same building, same kids, new name was how they did it then. They have all been shut down, but there have been spin-off programs. So staff members from Strait went off and created their own program. There have been a lot of those. Activism has closed them. There is one program remaining that is a Strait spin-off, and it is in Canada.
Patty, thank you for your call.
It's a pleasure. And Cindy, God bless you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Sean in Charlotte. Welcome, Sean.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to call because I went to an institution similar to this in Charlotte.
Sean, you are on a cell phone. You need to stand very still because you keep breaking up. So stand very still.
Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
But, you know, I had some things happen when I was a kid, and I think my parents just didn't know what to do, and I went to a similar institution, but not nearly as long.
Right.
But I learned more bad things there than I ever knew going in.
Mm.
And it was really tough coming out because it was hard to explain to your friends where
right.
you were 6 weeks over the summer.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a tough time. So.
How do you explain why you didn't come out of there? Tougher, harder, angrier?
I was broken. I think there were a couple of different types of kids in there. There were those of us who were soft and sensitive and empathetic, born that way. And then there were other kids who were a lot meaner. My nature is very gentle, so it's not really in me to become brittle and mean.
Sean, thanks for your call. Let me go to Joe in Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Cindy. Thank you for writing your book. You know, this is tough. I was in Strait in 1991, and I can tell you the feeling is still very raw 20 years later. You know, as we tried to share our story, because nobody has believed us for so long.
Right.
They wouldn't believe us back then, and we're trying to express it now.
Mm-hmm.
People don't, you know, there's always this part about not believing us, because why did we get there?
Right.
So I was not one of those kids that did a lot either.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it was not a last resort. That's a lie. And so, but I was told, the group was told, here's my question. An executive staff came in. I'll say her name, I guess.
I don't think.
You don't say.
Well, executive staff came in and said to us that the goal of the was to psychologically induce a rock bottom in us, like addiction or alcoholism would, because they knew that as kids we hadn't gone through that yet. So they were trying to recreate this this bottom in us so that they could induce change.
Mm.
And that was one of the psychological approaches. And to me, that was emotionally devastating.
Mm.
My question is, Cindy, would that help explain some of their tactics?
That's a really fair question coming from a former Straitling, I think. I think it's pretty cool that you're trying to see it from their point of view. So do I think that is a technique that can work? I mean, I know I came out of there saying, yeah, you know, I was addicted to cigarettes, and that proves I'm an addict. And if I had, you know, if I even tried another drug, I would be a full-blown addict, and maybe I would have. I mean, I was going down a bad path, and if there hadn't been some intervention, who knows what would have happened.
We've talked about how these people maybe do it for money, how they also are a cult, and they had a philosophy of correction.
Right.
Were there psychologists, psychiatrists on their boards of directors, on their staffs? Was there anybody saying to them, psychologically, medically, this is a valid way of doing things, or they just make this stuff up?
Here's my best answer for that. There is an ad. There's a website called SurvivingStraitInc.com that has it's an archive of materials, including internal Strait Incorporated documents. One of them is an ad seeking staff for Strait, seeking executive staff, adult staff. The degree requirement was one in marketing.
Joe, thank you for your call. Given the fact that we've heard from two other people who went through this experience today, And there are thousands who went through this experience around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we know more about this?
It goes back to the PTSD. And this is opinion. This isn't medical fact. Okay. I once read, and this was Wikipedia, so take it with a grain of salt. But I once read about the process of PTSD, and this made sense to me. This thing that I read said that the traumatizing event is often repressed. The timeline is 20 to 25 years. So at that 20-year mark, the memories start resurfacing.
So it's kind of like kids who were sexually abused coming forward when they're well into adulthood.
Exactly.
Donna writes, it's uncanny how similar my upbringing was to Cindy's. These programs were just coming into being, but I have no doubt my mom would have put me in one. Instead, she sent me to stay with various relatives and proclaimed me a bad kid. This was all because I started rebelling against my stepfather's abuse and her neglect. It wasn't love. It was about power and control. What do you tell parents? Because you do this now.
Mm.
You're not only a high school teacher. You're in the teen life coaching business.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell parents today who have kids who are exhibiting worrisome, troubling behavior that they don't know how to handle? What do you tell them how to get these kids the help they need?
I am not an expert on referring them to sources for the help. What I do is I encourage the parents to stop doing one technique that tends to provoke the negative behavior and to switch to a better approach.
You turned out okay.
I did.
What was the success rate, if there was one, at Straight Incorporated?
Oh, I don't think there was success.
And nobody was keeping track of it.
I don't think so, no.
Cindy Adler's been our guest. She's the author of Straightling, which is about her experiences for 18 months in this correctional facility for kids, run by kids, called Straight Inc. in the 1980s. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you.